This is Digital Dave, and I have a universal replacement host, Jay.
It's Jay. It's not just for news anymore.
Just Jay.
Just Jay. I'll come up with something spectacular later.
He took his last name when he came here.
And I will say, it's not fun being on the other side of that bumper.
Oh, come on. I just love the line about Charles Darwin.
Very good.
And also joining us is Bijan Maliki. Did I get that anywhere near right?
Oh, my gosh. That was perfect. Nobody gets it that right.
Yeah, want me to say it again?
No, kind of.
And you get to fly the privateer.
I do. I'm very, very lucky. I'm one of two PICs on the privateer.
How many of those are around? I mean, I've never even seen one before.
It's the last one flying. There's about 7 airframes left in the world, and most of them are in museums.
Wow. Now, I understand that was a plane purpose-built for the Coast Guard?
Purpose-built for the Navy, actually.
Navy. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, they're like Coast Guard, but more important. Why single tail?
So it adds lateral stability down low. It was an overwater, low-altitude airplane, and they added 7 feet in front of the wing to the fuselage to allow more crew members to go on these long overwater missions, which destabilizes the airplane, so they needed more vertical area.
Okay, okay. What do these missions primarily consist of? Search and rescue or target acquisition?
Yeah, naval mission was mostly anti-ship, anti-sub, so it would have carried bombs, torpedoes, munitions.
So it had teeth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And
nice.
The Navy boys really took it to the next level. They really chased down Japanese airplanes, bombers, and transports, and treated it like a large fighter.
I was going to say, in that thing, I wouldn't think it would be much of a match for even the lousiest Japanese fighter.
I know. There's actually a great story of two privateers in formation going against 7 Japanese fighters and surviving. So pretty cool stuff.
Wow.
Impressive. Did they see any action in like the European theater as well?
Yeah, it saw action in both theaters. You know, most of the stories that I think you will find populated are Pacific theater. It just seems like it had more success there. But it saw service in both theaters, and then after the war, the privateer was used all the way up through the 50s. One was shot down in the Cold War by a Russian MiG over Latvia, near Riga, Latvia. They were used by the French in the French Indochina conflict. The Coast Guard used them. It was the original Hurricane Hunter, flew like the P-3 mission.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. VX-1 flew it in the hurricanes. Crazy stuff.
Yeah. So it really actually had quite a long life.
Oh, yeah. And then this airplane became a fire bomber from, it was acquired in 58, and they put the bigger R2600 engines on it and flew until 2003 as a active fire bomber.
Wow. So when you got it, it was actually in really good condition.
Yeah, it was still flying and working. So
you didn't have to do a ground up restoration.
It's never been restored. We did a large spar mod. It took a couple of 3 years to get that done, and now we just take it to support, you know, furthering education for kids, keeping people interested in aviation and supporting the military. So
how did you come into possession of it then? You had this whole story career doing all sorts of things. How did you get your hands on it at the end?
Well, I don't own it. It belongs to a private owner. So the CEO of U-Haul owns the airplane, and he fosters, he finds it to be important to keep our military, you know, focused on their history in terms of aviation. So we go to a lot of military air shows, and then also he really gets excited about getting kids involved in aviation.
And he rents it out on weekends for, you know, college moves.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very expensive way to move, but we'll do it.
Yeah. How do you get trained? There's only one flying?
There's only one flying. Just like a lot of the experimental aircraft, you know, you go through a check ride process. You need you get an authorized experimental aircraft, or kind of like the old LOA process. And so it's just a normal check ride, ATP check ride.
So as PIC, you also help train? Occasionally?
Yeah, we did a training weekend in April, got some SICs spun up in the airplane, basically. So, yeah, we'll do some training in the airplane. Next year or the year after, we're planning to go across the pond to Europe. It's probably the first time a privateer's been in Europe since the 60s or 70s.
Wow.
So we're going to need more bodies, so we're working on that.
Yeah, let's go to Latvia and see if we can find pieces of the one that got shot down.
You know, they asked us.
They're probably still there.
They asked us. And then coming from Thunder Over Michigan here, we got intercepted by Michael Turfer in the MiG-17 and Scott Gusikoff. And,
nice.
You know, we didn't get shot down, but we got some great pictures.
Yeah, we got nervous, though. and they weren't really looking for it, but the plane, their planes were just drawn to you.
Yeah, naturally. Yeah.
Hey, look. Wow. How long have you been flying her?
I started flying the Privateer in 2022, and I got a PIC check ride in December of 2024.
Cool. Nice airplane. What do you think, Jay?
I love it. I think it's I could never afford it, but I think it's a great mission. Like you kept it in service. It's one of the few that have kept moving and kept flying.
And it didn't have a period where it was neglected.
Mm-hmm.
So, one thing that I thought about, you know, we see all these warbirds and we go, oh, these are amazing machines. But we forget that they were only designed for about a 90-day life.
Mm-hmm.
And here they are all these years later, still flying, still holding together. That's amazing to me.
Well, it's a labor of love. Dave Goss at Goshawk Aviation in Casa Grande, Arizona, takes care of it. We're on a 30-hour inspection schedule and in a 200-hour SPAR NDT inspection schedule. So it's a lot of work to keep it going.
Yeah.
But we do it.
Well, I'm glad you fixed the SPAR.
Yeah, me too.
So, yeah, especially him. So, do you need a practice bomb? I mean, we could volunteer Jay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll just open the bomb bay door.
Put in a barrel and drop down. Yeah. Yeah. Why not?
And he'll scream all the way down. Whee!
But flying the Privateer is not the only thing that you do.
Right.
No, I'm lucky. You know, I'm also flying with Sport Class Air Racing. So I raced at Reno with Sport Class. I'm the Vice President of Ops for Sport Class Air Racing.
Okay, define Sport Class.
So you're familiar with National Championship Air Racing, mm-hmm. which would have been at Reno. There's also now another air racing organization, Sport Air Racing League, and they put on a race in Las Cruces. This year we're going to have a race with them in Las Cruces. We also have a pylon race with National Championship Air Racing in Roswell. I'm sure you guys have heard of that. So it's and I operate in Sport Class, which is one of the seven classes of racing under National Championship Air Racing, where we go out and race around pylons.
Right, but what are the requirements of a Sport Class aircraft?
It needs to be experimental. So experimental amateur built was the first iteration. Now it's open to any experimental, including exhibition. And it used to be, and it has to be propeller driven. That's about our only rule now. We can do turbines,
so it's
or
like
piston.
Unlimited for home builds.
Exactly. So I fly a Glass Air 3 that's got, you know, four or five nitrous bottles in it.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know,
got
all
6,000 horsepower.
So how did you even get into the Sport Class racing in the first place?
I went to Reno for years and just watched and was just fascinated by it. And one day I said, you know, I think I could probably do this. I should give it a try. So 2022, they announced it was the end of Reno. I was building a Harman rocket to go race with. And I'm like, oh, I'm not going to have this thing done in time if this is the last Reno Air Races. So I bought a Glass Air 3. A friend of mine actually had it. I've been trying to buy it for years. And he goes, oh, my gosh, I guess I'll let it go. So he sold it to me, made it a deal.
It was already flying?
The Glass Air had been sitting for 7 years. So I spent about 6 months getting it ready and training and all the other things that you do to get ready for that. And took it to Reno, and it was just a magical event for me.
What does training look like for one of these events?
So formation is the foundation of all racing, right? So lots and lots and lots of formation flying. I'm fortunate I live in Phoenix at a little air park, and there's four Reno racers right there at the air park and a couple other guys in the Phoenix Valley. And they spent lots of time, very generous with their time, flying with me almost every weekend day. Lots of formation stuff, and then testing with the airplane, getting it ready to go, and then we found an area out in the desert that's got actually an aerobatic box by a glider port, and we created our own race course, and we go down and fly at 50 feet in the box and get used to flying low.
There you go. I would think, though, being an unlimited class, you've got all sorts of different speed ranges of aircraft in there, and that's got to complicate the mix.
Well, yeah, it does somewhat. So Reno, you know, we had anything from 220 miles an hour up to 412 miles an hour in 2023. And so it's just racked and stacked from fastest to slowest, and we have four different heat races of eight airplanes each. And so it kind of, you know, inside of each heat, you might have a 30-mile-an-hour speed difference.
Okay, so it's not that big a deal.
Sure.
So how did you do in your first race?
I took third in my heat.
That's not too shabby.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah, typically, first race, you're just happy to finish.
That's all I wanted to do. And then, you know, you get there and the fangs come out and you know, you say, okay, this is my limit for cylinder head temperatures and oil temperatures, and next thing you know, you're like, well, maybe another five degrees.
Yeah,
like
right.
10 degrees.
Come on, And then you're like staring at the guy's tail, and I got to catch him.
Yeah, and then I ended up doing a new top end overhaul as soon as I got home after that deal.
Cooked it, did you?
Cooked it.
Nice. Well, so, at least it didn't let you down on in flight. Go ahead, Jay.
I was going to say, so where can people find out more about your organization and how to get involved?
Yeah, check out Sport Class Air Racing. If you Google it, there's a website for actual Sport Class Air Racing, and then also National Championship Air Racing. Has a great website. Come out to Roswell. Come to Las Cruces. It's a fun event. It's family friendly. Great air show acts in between the racing. It's just an all-day fun thing. It's not what Reno was in terms of population or in terms of attendance, but I think we're growing it. I think we'll get there.
It will be.
Yep.
What about Privateer? Where do we find out more about that?
PB4YPrivateer.com. You can go on the website. We've got lots of pictures, some information. Anybody wants to book us for an air show act, they can reach out to us there.
Sounds good.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate you taking some time and coming and talking to us today.
You bet. Thanks for the opportunity.
Okay, Jay, ready?
Yeah. I'm Jay.
And this is Digital Dave.
And this is EAA Radio.